From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Now it is time for very serious football talk with the man who hates money almost as much as he hates the idea of a healthy sleep schedule.
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
The man who has so many children, his wife figured he wouldn't even notice if she bought a few chickens and ducks for the backyard.
We could have an episode where we just have my children appear on the show.
I would
in
love.
Ascending order. So we'll do like a minute of Lucas, then 2 minutes of Isabel, then 3 minutes of... Man, I have a lot of kids.
The man who does all of this while being a lawyer in a state that has snow all 12 months of the year.
Until it freezes, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I actually felt very at home driving through southern Iowa. It was snow everywhere, and people were slowing down to like 40. It was adorable. I was driving slowly, but I literally was hanging my head out the window screaming, and that was disconcerting.
It's Seth Kaiser of the Chief in the North newsletter, The Athletic, and the Times Hours podcast on Almost Entirely Sports.
It has been a really long time since we have had an Almost Entirely Sports on a Tuesday. Blame the NBA playoffs. Blame it was the Home Run Derby or the All-Star Game or something. Blame sports, real-life sports that we have if you want. But all of that is in the rearview now because we have a show tonight, which means we have a Seth Kaiser Tuesday. Seth Kaiser of the Chief of the North newsletter, The Athletic, the Times Ours podcast. Seth, it is good to hear your voice on the radio once again.
It is good to have my voice heard on the radio. It just feels like a bunch of things just kind of got in the way. And, I mean, the fact that I had to text you multiple times and then call you and then show up at your house, threatening, you know, to do unspeakable things if you don't get me back on the radio. I'm okay laying all that aside now that we're back.
Well, and also, you know, I've kept up this ruse that we didn't have Tuesday shows, just hoping you won't fact-check me and realize we've had shows every Tuesday for the last month, and I just have decided I needed a Seth detox,
well,
you know?
The fact that you would even, like, convince people to hold basketball games on certain nights is a level of commitment heretofore unheard of.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I guess I really, really needed a break. That's all.
That's so you were like, you were Aaron Rodgersing me. Basically.
Yes, that is exactly right. I was Aaron Rodgersing. Is that the right way to make that a verb? Yeah. You and I just, you know, you agreed to void the last year of my deal. I agreed to go ahead and have you on through the rest of the season again. And then after this football season, then you're going to trade me to Denver.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Are you at all nervous about the – are you willing to go a full year in advance and wonder that if this time next year Aaron Rodgers is going to be wearing Broncos colors?
If Aaron Rodgers is a Bronco in 2022, you know what I'll do?
Sleep fine at night still?
Yeah, and also absolutely nothing that would be any sort of self-harm or anything, eating something hot.
Sure.
None of those things are things that I will do if Aaron Rodgers says. It would be kind of an interesting thing. They've got a really good receiver core. You know, some of the core of their defense is starting to age out,
mm-hmm.
and that's at least worth considering. So they've got a good roster. I think they are in a situation, the Broncos are, where I think they are almost becoming, in a sense, and we'll see, you know, maybe they do get an elite quarterback and suddenly everything changes for them. Maybe this year they're much better. Every year is a unique entity in the NFL, mm-hmm. right? And that's why it's kind of, you and I actually were texting about this recently, that sometimes I'm hesitant to compare, like, just because something happened 1 year doesn't mean that if things had gone the same, it would happen the next year, just because every year is so different.
Right.
So maybe they're awesome this year. What I will say is this, the conversation that surrounds the Broncos right now is almost like, oh, if they had a good quarterback, they'd be awesome. And I wonder if they're kind of benefiting from being bad.
I think you're right.
You know, it's kind of like they get to be like that underperforming you know, backup type that comes in every now and then and plays, but, you know, he's not in very often. And so, oh, if you only got his chance, you know, if they only did this or that or whatever. It's kind of like we love the idea of potential. And I feel like that's where the Broncos are at, because I've been hearing this about them for years now at this point. And maybe they're just not that good. Because, I mean, like the Chiefs with Matt Castle still went 10-6 and made the playoffs. Like maybe if the rest of your roster was that good, maybe, and your coaching's that good, maybe you would make the playoffs every now and then.
I think this is a take that I haven't really heard anyone get to yet, and I think it is an exceptional one. Because you even said, you know, they've got great receivers. It's like, well, they have Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, and that's fine. Jerry Jeudy, I think, will be pretty good. But, you know, that you look at their offensive line, you've got some names that you'll recognize, but we're not sure they're all going to actually pan out. We're talking about again, Noah Fant should be in the receiver conversation from the tight end spot. But, like, there are Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, sure. They just drafted Patrick Surtain Jr. or the second or whatever, and we think he'll probably be good, but top 10 defensive backs, they flame out sometimes. Like I think that there is an overrating of what the Broncos currently have that would honestly probably look to be justified if Aaron Rodgers showed up, because Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton are probably both 1,000-yard receivers with Aaron Rodgers throwing to them. So, like, I think it's probably a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy without that roster actually being that great right now.
I completely agree. And again, you can't disprove it, right?
Right, it's impossible.
Yep, and that's the beauty of series like that. It's kind of like being able to say, well, if you gave X quarterback Y weapons, he would be just as good as Mahomes. Mm-hmm. No one can ever disprove that, and that's what makes series like that so beautiful. And that's why I think that they're always going to stay around, honestly, because you can't disprove them. So anyway, I mean, I didn't mean to start us off just, you know, with a ton of Broncos talk, but it's a kind of a theory I've started to develop about them lately, because you hear so often how great their defense is. It's like, well, are they a great defense, or are they a good defense that's also aided by the fact that teams really don't need to exert themselves against that defense because their offense sucks?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just throwing ideas out there. Who knows if they're correct? They're a good defense, certainly. But are they that good? Who knows? Kind of like when we talk about the Chargers, literally every season.
Well, the other thing with the defensive side, and this is just sort of a big football philosophy conversation, that I'm just going to say this. I'm going to say this as an opinion with no real information to back it up, because who's going to stop me? But I feel like, I'm not sure I would put my life on the line for it, but I feel like that there are basically like three sort of choke points on how good a defense is and then the impact it has. If your defense, I think we've talked about this some with the Chiefs probably. If your defense is terrible, that is a problem. If the 2018 Chiefs, that is a problem. If your defense is the 2019 or 2020 Chiefs, where it's pretty, like, it's pretty okay, it's pretty good, it's certainly not costing you a bunch of football games, but it's also not the reason you're winning. There's sort of that category. And then I think that category is much larger than we probably give it credit for, because the next stage, I think, only really matters if you have an elite defense. And I don't think that there's a reason to argue that on behalf of the Broncos. Like, I think there are probably super ballpark 10 really terrible defenses, 20 defenses that keep your head above water, and then two defenses that actually change games on their own.
Right, and it's hard to change games as a defense.
Right, yeah, just because it's so difficult. Week out. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so that group of 20 teams there or so, there's definitely a sliding scale there, right? Because you've got some teams that, you know, they will change some games. So, like, take the Chiefs, for example. There were some games where, you know, maybe Chris Jones just takes over on third down multiple times. Or, you know, you get things like that. But it's not a consistent game in and game out thing. And so then you just have this sliding scale for how often you take over those games. But really, if you've got, like, to have a great defense, and I think that becomes a misnomer all too often. We call things great that aren't really great. It's a great flaw that we have. Anyway, so, sorry. I found that way too funny on my end. I apologize. That's if you so want to cut that, please feel free.
That's so good.
So Sorry.
That will be a part of something in the future. I don't know what it will be, but your own laughing at yourself will be saved.
Yeah. The horrifyingly self-loathing laugh. Yeah. Anyway, so, okay, what was I? Oh, okay, moving the needle. And defense that will actually win you games. We call things great that aren't actually
right.
great.
Right, like your great joke, yeah.
Yep, like my great joke. Good Lord. We tend to call things great that aren't actually great. And for a defense to be great, it really should be one that moves the needle every single week, regardless of opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing that gets missed. The Chiefs' defense certainly can move the needle against non-elite offenses or non-good offenses. They're not usually going to, like, shut down a good offense.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to be a great defense. You should be a defense that great offenses roll into town, and or good offenses at the very least, because great offense beats great defense generally in today's NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to stop them. You should be able to affect the game. And there just aren't those out there. And I would argue that the Broncos weren't really that team most of the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, we ended up talking about the Broncos a ton. But it's an interesting conversation into how we view teams that are falling short.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to move the needle a little bit in terms of what great is. Because, I mean, you know, people – but whereas teams that we know are contenders – we tend to really pick apart their weak spots, and it's almost like an idea of there's almost some relativism going on there,
yeah.
where it's like people call the Chiefs defense this potential huge weakness,
mm-hmm.
but it's really a decent defense in all likelihood. It's just not as good as a really great offense.
Right.
Whereas if you put that same defense on a team with a crummy offense, I'm not saying the Broncos and the Chiefs have the same defense. It's mm-hmm. just this idea of this sliding scale.
Right.
And how we view these things. It's an interesting conversation, I think, worth having.
And also, like you say, you know, you didn't mean to start this with 10 minutes of Broncos talk or whatever, but I think it was mostly 10 minutes of us saying we think the Broncos are even worse than people give them credit for. And so, like, I think our audience will find that 10-minute conversation worthy of their time.
Absolutely. And we'll see. I mean, obviously, you never know. Well, one thing, you know, one year, what leads to the next. But I just, yeah, like you said, when you break down they're great players, or they're good players, or the people they're building their team around, there's some extrapolating going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily fair.
Yeah.
Also, I can't believe we've been talking this long, and we haven't talked about the fact that Patrick Mahomes now owns 78% of Kansas City.
Yeah, I think I haven't seen him tweet about it yet, but I think Mayor Q's got to be shaking in his boots, because that's all that's next for Mahomes at this point, I think, right? Like, he's going to eventually, in his last contract, he's going to demand 51% of the Chiefs from Clark Hunt, and then he's going to run for mayor. And then at that point, it's just, then you can have Kansas City, Kansas, and Patrick Mahomes, Missouri.
And let's be real. If Patrick Mahomes decided to run for mayor, I mean, he'd absolutely win.
With like 75% of the vote.
Yeah.
It would be
maybe,
a lot.
Maybe that says something about how we vote.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a good
thing. Yeah, what we take into consideration.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it's not like I'm immune. Because if someone were to tell me, you know, I think Patrick Mahomes might run for mayor. Now, I don't live in Kansas City. I'd probably, given what I've seen everything else from him, I'd probably be like, you know what? Give him a chance.
Right.
He's excels at literally everything. I mean, it's kind of like my theory behind The Rock becoming president one day.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you're great at everything, maybe you're great at being president. Who knows? I don't know.
I think we're about to get Matthew McConaughey testing that theory also in Texas. I think that theory might be getting put to work.
Well, and also, I'm not sure if that's a theory that we should be testing with, like, you know, real world experimentation.
Yeah.
On things that are important. But, I mean, Patrick Mahomes at this point has become, I would say, the biggest sports player, you know, to speak the way my wife does,
mm-hmm.
in Kansas City history, right? Like, I mean, what would his only competition be? George Brett?
You mean as an
Derek
athlete?
Thomas?
You mean player in the literal sense, not in the mover and shaker way.
But I mean, even in a mover and shaker's way, I mean, I don't know Kansas City super well, so I mean, you know,
there's
sure
just,
be it, other people. But in terms of sports,
yeah,
I just think it's impossible to surpass him. You know, Derek Thomas was incredible, one of the greatest players to ever live. But in terms of like impact on the team itself, It's hard to argue with two Super Bowl appearances and a Super Bowl victory, another AFC championship appearance in this amount of time. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And,
yeah.
And now Mahomes, like, you know, owning the – it's just – it's hard to think of, like, to see this amount of buy-in. And in the meantime, Aaron Rodgers, like, I got to get out of Green Bay, man.
Well, so like, that's one of the things that I do think is interesting from some of the Rodgers stuff, like that – like, they literally like had a turning point at bringing back Randall Cobb, who's like 75 years old in receiver years. And so I that was something that Mahomes and Reed got asked about. I think it was Friday or Saturday. I think it was Friday, where I think Sorin asked both of them about the Packers situation, and it is kind of wild to see like and. Mahomes is on a very long contract, which he did not have to sign. He could have signed a shorter deal with still an enormous amount of money. But not only did he sign the longer contract, he signs the longer contract and then just starts using that money, and his endorsement money, obviously, to buy stock in Kansas City sports in mass, like in a major way. I'm almost nervous to say it out loud because, I don't know, because weird stuff happens, especially over the course of a decade, but like, Patrick Mahomes has a ton of money, influence, and power, and he has used seemingly all of it so far to just be like, yeah, no, I am just going to make Kansas City where I want to be with all of this, as opposed to using any of that to try to, like, get anywhere else or plan an escape plan or something, right? Like, it's just, I'm just going to make Kansas City in my image. I'm going to pay to put a statue of myself on the plaza at some point because I'm Patrick Mahomes.
That actually, I really like your way of framing that, because it's like this idea, like you said, he's turning it into like, okay, this is where I'm going to make my home.
Right.
And everyone else would say, well, I need to find like a really great gym. Mahomes is like, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to convince my trainer to move here.
Right.
You know, everyone else would be like, I guess I'll try to adopt, you know, the local teams to an extent. Maybe I'll just keep cheering for the team from my hometown. Mahomes is like, I'm going to buy some of these franchises, so I'm really invested in their success long term. Some people would say, I'm really going to miss Whataburger. And, you know, and Patrick Mahomes says, I'm just going to go ahead and get him to come to Kansas City, I guess. It is, he really does nothing halfway, and I think it's demonstrative of, like you said, just making Kansas City his home. It really is a fever dream for Chiefs fans, because it's not just a great quarterback. He's genuinely like the franchise quarterback. Very close to just being the franchise at this point. So it's a really cool thing. I'm excited about it. And I assume, like everything else he does, it'll be successful at some point, like everything.
You said, like, almost literally the franchise. This is a hypothetical that we don't need to be playing, but I'm thinking about it now. If you said, hey, where would you rather start right now? You got an expansion NFL franchise in literally anywhere. You're going back to Oakland, whatever, doesn't really matter. You got an expansion franchise, and your only player currently is Patrick Mahomes, or you have the rest of the Kansas City Chiefs organization just minus Patrick Mahomes. You've got to start with Mahomes. Like, that's, I don't even think that there's a counterpoint.
Yeah, and it's not even hard.
Right. Yeah. You can go poach Eric Bieniemy and then try to get a few players in an expansion draft to get yourself in publicly funded stadium, call it Mahomesville. I think that's easy. It's crazy.
Well, and the funny thing that I would say with that is it's an easy choice, and to really hammer home how different he is from everything else. The players themselves, like, let's say if you were talking to the players as you made this sadistic decision, if I were to walk up to even someone who is very prideful and very good at what they do, if I was to walk up to Chris Jones and Tyrann Mathieu, right, two of the best players in the NFL, and I said to them, look, guys, I had to choose between the entire roster or Pat, and I chose Pat, they would both absolutely say, yeah, I would too.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, yep. they wouldn't even, and again, I don't know how this conversation would occur, but they would make the exact same choice, and no one would even question it. And it's tough to say that about anyone else in the NFL.
Yeah, and it creates such an interesting, and we've all just sort of accepted it as fact, but it just sort of creates such an interesting surrounding narrative and vibe for everything that is anywhere near Patrick Mahomes and or the Chiefs. It's wild. All right, so we haven't talked in a while on this show, as we've mentioned at the beginning of the segment. I kind of want to rat-a-tat-tat through some things you've written about, I think just since last time you were on with us, and try to get you to explain a few things to me, what you're thinking on a few Chiefs topics. Are you ready for some rat-a-tat-tat?
Yeah, sure. You mean on the Chief of the North newsletter, where I'm currently doing a mailbag that involves the giveaway of Super Bowl confetti? From the good Super Bowl, mind you. Not the one they lost.
That very one at mnchiefsfan.substack.com or bit.ly/Seth really hates money, which will also get you there. Or, of course, you could just be following you on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan and then click the links there. Or even if you just Google the phrase the Chief in the North newsletter, you will, of course, find it very easily there. Again,
you will.
mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Confetti, you said?
Confetti, yes. I still have. I've got a big old gob of Super Bowl confetti from the Hard Rock Stadium. That every time I say it, I have to think very carefully because of a great joke Nate made once, or a slip of the tongue, in terms of what the stadium's name was, which I don't think I need to go into detail on.
Use imagination.
It was confetti that was poured onto the turf as the Chiefs brought home a Super Bowl win. And because of the unmatchable Danny Welniak, I have a whole gob of it. Fantastic. And so I've been giving it away to people who subscribe to the newsletter. It's been a lot of fun. And so that's the latest I'm doing, is doing a mailbag, and then people enter by asking questions in the mailbag. And then I'm going to pick 3 winners and send them some Super Bowl confetti. It's going to be fun.
So you can go to do that, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. And on that note, Seth, here's what I will suggest. We're pretty early on in our conversation here, but if we take a commercial break right now, we can come back and then rat-a-tat-tat through a bunch of Chief topics.
That sounds amazing.
Let's do that. More Seth Kizer whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Good chicken is worth the money. I'm glad we could talk about this.
This is really, and it's all kind of analogous to good chicken is worth the money. So is good Chiefs writing.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Seth Kizer of the Chief of the North newsletter, still with us here, as he is every Tuesday that we have a show, which has been a while, but we're back now here on Almost Entirely Sports. As we said before the break, Seth, there's a bunch of stuff to catch up on. I want to get some little, one question per topic kind of thing, and then if people want any more, they can go read about it, because these are all things that you've written about on the Chief of the North newsletter.
Cool. I'm so sorry. I thought I had enough time to tune back in before you threw it to me, I just failed miserably. I'm sorry.
Let's start with the serious thing, because that feels like a good segue, because I think you really wrote something excellent about Frank Clark. You and Real Bird Lawyer, as he's known on Twitter, at Bird Law Expert, also a regular contributor to Arrowhead Report, since you brought it up. I brought it up, that was a joke. But you guys wrote about Frank Clark a little bit, where his case is from a couple of prosecutors' perspectives, reported it with among the veterans, as far as we know, nothing new. Andy Reid said they're going to let it all play out. What are you thinking about what we know about Frank Clark right now?
So with Clark, it was kind of interesting. I was able to, once we started writing about it and as things were going along, information on criminal cases is generally publicly available. And so I was able to kind of pull up some information from his case. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to get, like, police reports and stuff, but you can get some of the general information. And it was also reported that, as of now, you know, he's got the one charge, one file, felony possession of assault rifle, or not assault rifle, but assault weapon, which can mean a variety of things, just on a side note. But now it's, my understanding, has been set out to a hearing, a continued arraignment / plea hearing in October. What that tells me is it's probably not going to affect at least the start of his season in Kansas City, because it doesn't seem like the NFL is going to do anything in this case, at least as far as we can tell. Mm-hmm. And they're probably saying, we're going to let the legal process play out. We have our own investigation. But this isn't like a domestic violence case, right, where mm-hmm. there's, victims to interview and really bad publicity. And that sounds like a callous way of saying it, but that's absolutely what the NFL is worried about.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to say they're super worried about victims, and maybe they are to an extent, but they're also very worried about their bottom line and publicity. Whereas this, I don't know another way to say that a lot of NFL players travel with guns, people. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't like brand new information. Tom Bahali picked up a gun charge for a while, like, from an incident in Florida, which, you know, it's Florida, so everyone was like, yeah, okay, that happens.
Right.
But, and so, I mean, a lot of NFL players carry a weapon. And, you know, that's just, I think you're seeing kind of a shrug. And I think that's one reason when there were a lot of people saying, wow, you know, think the Chiefs will cut him? I would be surprised by something like that. So from the legal standpoint, when you have something set up for continued arraignment / plea hearing, that means a few things. That means that as of the initial appearance, they hadn't filed any contested motions. It's called in the state of Minnesota omnibus hearings. It's basically this idea that, you know, if you wanted to contest a stop, that's when you'd file a motion. You'd have a contested hearing as to, you know, oh, you didn't have reasonable articulable suspicion to pull them over, and blah, 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 blah. All this fun lawyer stuff. What it tells me is they're probably trying to resolve the case because he either possessed a gun or he didn't.
Right.
Right? This isn't like – there's just not a lot of gray
I possessed
area
a gun
here.
A little bit. Well, no, that's not – yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's just not how it works, right? You don't – there's no halvesies. It's like, well, can I plead the half? And then that guy takes the other half. And so what they'll probably do, my guess is, come up with some plea agreement where they convince the DA's office, which is the same jurisdiction – to not charge out the second case if he plays ball on the first case. Mm. Either that or it gives his attorney time to maybe produce a sworn affidavit from, you know, an individual saying that was my gun, I left it in there, he had no reason to know it was in there, et cetera, et cetera. Whether or not that defense would be true is an entirely different point. I don't know if you remember ever hearing Chris Carter, like, it's some of the stuff, you know, talking about, like, you know, everyone has a guy. Everyone's got a guy.
Gotta have a gun.
It's like, dude, that was your gun. No, Frank, no, dude, that was your gun. Now, maybe they do that, maybe they don't. But basically, it doesn't seem like it's set out for contested hearings at this point. That tells me they're probably trying to resolve it. One point that I really hammered home in the article is just because there's a maximum penalty of 3 years in prison does not mean he's going to go to prison. And I will say it this way. The maximum penalty for a first-time felony drug conviction in the state of Minnesota is 5 years. Hmm. Really serious, right?
Yeah.
It's actually literally impossible to be sentenced to 5 years in the
literally?
State of Minnesota. It's literally impossible. The sentencing guidelines don't allow it. Top of the box, which is a phrase with regards to the sentencing guidelines, is like 23 months or something like that executed. And so
it sounds pretty serious if they get
executed
at the end of
23
months.
I've never met anyone that's even seen it happen. And that's just something worth keeping in mind for people that think Frank Clark's going to prison for 3 years.
I'm really glad you just powered through over the joke I was making. It didn't deserve any sort of response. And I'm hoping you honestly didn't even fully hear it.
I actually didn't. I'm a little bummed.
I said that it sounds pretty serious if they get executed at the end of the 23 months. You said 23 months, executed. That feels bad.
There are a few legal terms that you have to power through when you're a prosecutor and then say the next part of the sentence very quickly. It's like, well, Your Honor, I think we need to execute. What that means is we're talking about executing the stayed sentence.
That, got it.
And because a stayed sentence. And then the other thing is people are always sentenced to jail time, and the jail time is almost always stayed, where it hangs over their head and they go on probation, right? Well, most people aren't really super familiar with that terminology, and so it happens all the time. I'm going to sentence you to a year in the Hubbard County Jail, and people go, a year in jail, and they freak out. And it's like, hang on, we're going to stay that. And what do you mean I have to stay there? You know, it's just a whole deal. So there are some terms that you have to use, and you have to use those terms when you're on the record, that result in a lot of confusion like that. And execution is one of them.
Execution feels like a dark one. I still don't – so wait, so if a sentence is stayed, what does that mean?
A stayed sentence means probation. So a stayed sentence, it's like I'm going to stay – so far you and I have stayed our tasing and eating of the ghost pepper, right?
Right.
We are going to do it, but it's been stayed for a period of time. When something is stayed, it's held off on. It hangs over your head. And so when someone's sentenced to jail, they usually get probation instead of actual executed jail time. And so their jail time is stayed for a period of, you know, 5 years, during which time they're placed on probation with the conditions that they et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, probationary conditions. So that's what it means by stayed jail time. It's essentially a way of talking about probation with jail time hanging over your head.
Interesting. We learn something every week. It's just not always about football things. From if you want more on the Frank Clark thing, the article is a great read, and some of it is honestly hard to get auditorially for me. Some of it you need to be able to read a couple times. There's a bunch of legal stuff, but they do a really good job breaking that down there in the Chief in the North newsletter, and then chiefsfan.substack.com. Young Guns, a new series that you started. Let's start with Willie Gay. What is your back of the napkin sort of guess as to what his 2021 is going to look like? What did you see from his rookie campaign?
I really like Willie Gay, and going back and looking at his stuff from 2020, what usually happens when you've got young players that flash a little bit is you go back and you watch a lot more snaps and you're like, eh, you know, like for an example, that would be a guy I'm still very excited about, Tershawn Wharton.
Yep.
Very excited about him. And we'll chat about him, I know, in a minute. Yep. But usually the more snaps you review with a young guy who flashes, the more you see consistency issues and how few and far between those flash plays were. With Willie Gay, it was kind of the opposite. Mm. When he actually got on the field, he made a lot of splash plays, and he jumps out on film. So I'm excited for him. I think I keep talking about him as kind of a dark horse guy, even though a ton of people think that he will be. So it's, you know, it's not super, I don't know what the term would be there, but I don't, I'm not really, you know, pushing new ground here.
Right.
But he's a guy that I'm really intrigued about in terms of what he can add to the defense, because adding someone with significant range who can cover but still be strong against the run, that's worth something schematically in the modern-day NFL, and you can see that with, like, the Fred Warner contract.
Mm. What keeps him off the field?
The only thing that would keep him off the field, in my opinion, there are two things. One would be if he just genuinely has a problem picking up the mental aspects of things in terms of not falling for play fakes, you know, misdirections, that sort of stuff, because he can be faked out of position.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the first thing. The second thing would be stubbornness by the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And look, the Chiefs have an exceptional coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
They do a great, great job, but it doesn't make them omniscient.
Right.
And I would say they kept him off the field too much last year in favor of Ben Niemann, who they know knows the system better, and cost them plays in different ways.
Yeah.
They would rather have plays get blown or have plays be cost to them through lack of physical ability than a mental error. And that's what you saw, I think, at times last year. So I think that those are the two possibilities there, where they just can't quite get over this idea of, but man, he knows the system so well. And when you think about it, it's easier to be sympathetic to this idea when you think about what coaches are seeing in practice every day, right?
Sure.
Because, you know, practice isn't a game. And in practice, if a guy is in the exact right spot over and over and over again, imagine how hard it is as a coach to not play that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's nothing else you can show, really, other than to do that and get there as fast as possible. But once, I mean, I don't know, to break my own rule of rat-a-tat-tatting through, because I think Willie Gay is super interesting. I mean, you have examples where he ended up out of position and then made up for it with his athleticism. Did you feel like you saw enough of him ending up out of place or maybe floating the wrong direction to justify keeping him off the field until he cleans some of that up? Or do you think that maybe there is a little bit of that stubbornness or giving the favorite of Ben Niemann that's doing more work than perhaps his Willie Gay's mistakes may have allowed?
I didn't see enough of it to justify it, in my opinion. Of course, I'm not the one who has to limit assignments and play calls based on who's in there. And so obviously only House and Spagnuolo really know what they have to do, right? Mm-hmm. And so if what I see is some missed assignments that aren't as often as one might think, and what they see is, yeah, but that's when we're only making this dude do 20% of what we want.
Yeah.
You know, that's a different analysis. And so I hate to be the guy that's like, well, without being in the huddle, it's tough to say. But it really would be going above my pay grade to say, oh, no, absolutely, the juice is worth the squeeze. For me, it would have been,
right.
I think. But I also happen to believe that the best way for players to learn is trial by fire.
Yeah.
And, like, really get used to the speed of the game and really get used to those reps. And there's nothing like an NFL game. That's one reason why preseason does carry some value to sharpen teams up a little bit, because you cannot imitate an NFL game in practice. You just can't. And for people that have attended training camp, just being that close and seeing, like, in the days they have the pads on and are hitting, how crazy it is, that gets ramped up times 10 on game day. And the only way you can really learn to be that fast and to recognize and react that quickly is reps. So that's the route I would have gone. But, again, they're great coaches that have done a good job developing people. So I guess we'll see. We'll see, and it'll all pay off if, let's say, this year, it's like, wow, look at the steps he took. Okay, fair enough. Then who am I to question the developmental path, right?
Right. Well, and also you mentioned, like, the learning on the field thing is I very much agree with you. But I'm also thinking now, like, I'm not sure that Willie Gay in weeks, let's say, 1 through 8 last year, totally arbitrary, just first half of the season, I don't know that it would have been good for him to be on the field and in learning weeks 1 through 8 with a weird offseason and everything. And then once you get to weeks 9 through 17, you start saying, well, can he learn on the field right now? These games mean more. The inverse, though, is that if he's got, you know, wherever he was to maybe earn some time to make mistakes in real games and to justify that, he should be there for week 1 this year, right? Like, the first 8 weeks or whatever of this season, if he's out there and he's out of position some, I'm not going to complain. If he does that, though, and it ends up costing them a first-round bye in week 16, then you start going, like, what is this dude doing out here? So even then, the situation does sort of change year to year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm excited to see what he does. He pops out more than I had remembered. When you look at the games where he played a lot of snaps, he is a noticeable presence on the field. And not just with his speed, but his physicality as well. It's noticeable.
The other part of the Young Gun series out right now, the aforementioned Tershawn Wharton, it sounds like you're saying that, you know, you saw those flashes from him, but it's not a he is not a consistently overwhelming player right now. He is a guy who also has flashes that pop up above where his standard is. Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely. His win percentage and loss percentage, which is a little easier to grade with defensive linemen as opposed to with linebackers where it's just like, they're just not where you'd want them to be. And it just, the loss types that he takes are tough.
Yeah.
And the wins are great. But I would just say, like, outside of his, he had a couple of really good games. Quality of competition mattered a ton with him. So, an example, he had a really tough game against New England. There was this left guard they had that just completely destroyed him constantly. Now, the good news is that guard's name was Joe Tooney, and he's now a Chief.
Right.
But against solid players with excellent technique, he really struggled. His way of winning right now, he's stronger than you'd think. He's actually very strong. He's got really good functional strength, but he's incredibly athletic and quick. But he just doesn't – there's just no piecing together of it right now. There's, like, his go-to move is essentially like a juke.
Yeah.
Right? Where, you know, he also will maybe try to club a guy aside while he does it. It's not really a pass rush move. It's just, I'm faster than you, which is great. But without actual pass rush moves, it's not going to be consistent. So it'll be interesting. I think working with Jaron Reed's a great opportunity for him. Reed is a guy who's more stout, but has got a little athleticism as well. But he's a vet, and he's learned how to fight through blocks. And what you see with Jaron Reed is he's always working throughout the entirety of the snap. He's changing what he's doing in accordance with what the lineman's doing. That's a great thing to learn from him. And so the consistency just isn't there yet. So if he provides what he did last year, that's fine, but it's not something you want more than a rotational guy.
Well, and also, he went to Missouri S&T, so it kind of makes sense that he would have issues with Joe Tooney, you know? Like, there.
Yes. Well, he went from playing against you and me to playing against, Joe Tooney.
Right. And so, you, me, and Tooney is, of course, a podcast I would listen to sometime in the future, so keep that in your head just because it's a good title. But, yeah, I mean, so, like, if you were going to say, hey, pick a guy to buy stock in, you get a guy that, you know, I'm going to slander another defensive tackle on this team right now. I don't really mean to, but like you say, hey, so Tershawn Wharton has these flashes, but he clearly has some work to do in terms of level of talent he's going up against. I would buy stock in him as an undrafted free agent, as opposed to, like, I don't remember a whole lot of flash plays from Colin Saunders as a rookie, right? And he was a third round pick, also pretty raw. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Wharton seems like a good guy to keep in mind with what you said there, to as a guy that you can be excited about and feel good about and not assume is going to replace Chris Jones in the middle.
Correct. It's a matter of consistency. He did have an excellent rookie year, though.
Yeah.
Like, all these things I'm saying need to be taken with the idea that he was a rookie, and doing the things he did as a rookie are it's very, very impressive. It's just a matter of, will you build on that? We often assume guys will, but they don't always.
Yeah. I want to ask you about something you haven't written about yet, and then I'm going to ask about your Patrick Mahomes on third down thing, because it's one of my favorite recurring topics that we get to discuss on this show. but the Alex Okafor signing, we haven't gotten to talk about with you here. What did you make of them bringing him back shortly after Melvin Ingram signed with the Steelers?
I assume the different price isn't that much.
Mm-hmm.
I know the contracts are publicly available. I should know that.
Okafor's actually hasn't been yet, and they only officially signed him yesterday, I think. So, as of this second.
I mean, I'm going to assume it's probably a couple million bucks, whereas I think Ingram was four.
Yeah.
And I would have gone with Melvin Ingram. Okafor fits the physical criteria more of what Spags generally looks for. But I think the fact that they had Ingram in as a visit before, you know, shows they're obviously interested. I would have probably outbid them for Ingram. It's worth noting both of them had health issues last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Okafor, unfortunately, hasn't been consistently healthy throughout his time in Kansas City. So we'll see. I'm glad they brought someone back. He is a guy. It's, you know, the roller coaster theory. You must be this tall to ride the roller coaster. He's a guy that you can plug in there, and he shouldn't be a weak spot on the defense. But he hasn't added a ton of juice to the pass rush. I think Ingram would have added more.
Yeah.
So that bummed me out to an extent, but I am glad that they brought Okafor back as opposed to just trying to stand pat at the position.
Okay, last thing here to send people into their, I guess, Tuesday night, Wednesday. Again, it's not as dramatic as if we had you on Fridays or something. But Patrick Mahomes on third down continues to find more charts that show that Patrick Mahomes is in fact an alien.
Yeah, he's just an alien. He's a freak. The way he does things, it was kind of funny. I'm going through trying to find like some of his best incomplete passes, which that's a thing. I'm still going to do it this year. Probably it'll get written during training camp. I just found a snap where it was, you know, like third and, you know, 20 or something crazy. And I watched him pass up a wide open player short of the line, like well short of the sticks. And he did it intentionally because he knew if I throw to this guy, we're going to get like a 10-yard gain here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're better off with me trying to make the play that gets it to happen, right?
Mm.
You know, it's one of those things. He's just built different. The way he analyzes these situations more and more as you watch him, everyone thought he was just running around making plays, and some of the time he was.
Right.
But there's a calculation with everything he does. When he knows with his skill set and the talent they have at receiver, he knows that maybe him running around and extending the play, they have a 10% chance at converting. But he knows throwing short of the sticks, 10 full yards short of the sticks, they've got like a 0.2% chance of converting.
Yeah.
There's a special analysis there that you don't see from other quarterbacks. Other quarterbacks take the check down every time, and they're called smart for it.
Right.
And it's just cool watching him understand when to, you know when to hold them, when to fold them. He really does have a good understanding of that.
I think it's great and something that might be, I was going to say important, and I think that's probably overstated, but a semi-important thing that we can do in analysis where it's not, the freak plays that go 40 yards downfield aren't always just freak athleticism, closing your eyes and going, yeet, and Alex Smith or Kirk Cousins, you know, throwing 7 yards short of the sticks on 3rd and 15 isn't always smart, that there is actually room there for you to evaluate that specific player. And Patrick Mahomes. Oh, hold on, I'm getting a notification. Oh, he just bought the entire he bought the Western Auto Tower. That's weird. I don't know that was actually for sale. Because Patrick Mahomes can buy anything he wants in Kansas City with that particular set of skills. One more time, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Also, that Mahomes piece, if you are not yet a subscriber, that one's unlocked for everybody. So you can go to mnchiefsfan.substack.com, bit.ly/SethHatesMoney or bit.ly/SethReallyHatesMoney, and you can give him merely $12, not for a month, not for 3 months, not for 6 months, but for a year of the Chief of the North newsletter, and not just your first year either. Seth continues to refuse to change that setup. It's $12 for a year forever if you get in while that price is still active, as it is right now here going into year two of the Chief in the North newsletter. Seth, thank you as always, and I can't remember what one of our jokes from the first segment was, which I was going to make a call back to, but I'm just kind of tired, and I forgot it.
You know what? That sounds about right, and it's only going to happen more as you get older.
Great. What a good – I mean, you would know. It's follow him on Twitter, @RealMNChiefsFan, before he realizes that I made a joke about him being old.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I'm so confused. The comment section is moving so fast. Why are people trying to buy a couch here? What's going on?
With Joshua Briscoe.
There's talk of couches and ottomans and waterbeds.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Last segment of the show here tonight. Thanks again to Seth Kaiser, of course, for joining us. As he does every Tuesday, we have a show, which had not been for a while. Go subscribe to the newsletter. Here's the thing that I wanted to round out tonight's show with. We were talking about this a little bit earlier before the show as well. The Weeknd, the singer, not the 2 days at the end of the week, hadn't tweeted it in a little while, and have mostly just sort of tweeted some like promotional stuff and retweeted some things. But then today, in the span of about 20 minutes, he tweeted the following things in separate tweets that I will, you know, leave gaps between. Just had a second PB&J San.
Nice.
I don't care. I am who I am. I eat. Anyways, I'm going to feed y'all soon. PB&J for your ears. And then like a sunset emoji or something that I've not seen before.
I had a PB&J today.
I had a...
not the weekend's PB&J, but you know, my own PB&J.
I had a Nutella and peanut butter sandwich for breakfast this morning with some sliced banana on it. Anyway, Beards, you've eaten probably still no jelly.
No.
Have you ever had peanut butter?
Yes.
Do you remember the last... Is this like an apple situation where you 100%. Don't... Where you do
I was
not-
a little.
Do you remember?
How have you not wanted to try peanut butter in your adulthood with an adult palate at any point?
Because I don't like the smell.
So you have no memory.
We've had this discussion 1,000 times already.
Yeah, but it's because you eat like a child.
So you have no memory of eating peanut butter. Like, you know you've had it.
You just don't like how it smells.
But you have no memory of it. Yeah, you don't actually know what peanut butter
is. Do you remember everything when you were a child?
No, we've eaten peanut butter since we were a child, though.
But there are things.
I wouldn't allow my peanut butter, my childhood distaste of peanut butter, be the reason I don't eat peanut butter in my adulthood, at least to try it.
I hate onions, and I try it every now and then just to see what see if I still like it.
This is fitting. I had a whole bit planned of which of these is your favorite. You know, real quick, which is your favorite tweet from the weekend? Just had a second PB&J San. I don't care. I am who I am. I eat. Anyway, I'm going to feed y'all soon. PB&J for your ears. Rudy.
I eat.
Beards.
I eat.
I kind of like just had a second PB&J San. I like that he shortened.
Also,
shortened San.
I am who I am is good too.
They're all good. The Weeknd also only follows one person, sort of like Skip Bayless only. Well,
boss move.
He only follows Skip Bayless. No, he follows some, like, I don't know. Maybe it's a company. HXOUSE. Probably pronounced house. I don't know. The Weeknd should only follow Skip Bayless, and Skip Bayless should only follow The Weeknd. That's it. That's the show. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, 7 to 10 tomorrow night. Until then, bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.